Hi everyone, you are now listening to our podcast, For a While. We are just two Filipina 30-somethings now currently based elsewhere in the world, trying to find our way and figuring out what that means for us. Our podcast is where we take a little break to regroup, share what we've learned, and find new ways to move forward. I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Andrea, and if you hear something that resonates, we'd love for you to let us know.
Hi.
Hi, Andrea.
Hello, how's your week?
Hectic, yes. I'm exhausted. I feel really, really tired. My body is aching. I've had quite a slow Saturday. Today I'm going to take it slow and have a proper rest this weekend. Yeah, how are you?
I feel the same way, actually. And I feel like it's worse because I'm not exactly doing anything. I think just staying in front of the computer for whatever reason, even if it's not really for work or anything like that, for hours at a time, I feel like it really takes its toll.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yeah, I think so. Desk work, I find it's very, it just makes your body feel so stiff. That I guess because you're not moving. Whenever I'm on my computer a lot, I always get lower back pain just from sitting down, or my neck aches, you know, like your shoulder. I think it's because you have your arms rested on the desk. And then it just feels, I don't know, I guess it tenses up.
Yeah.
I really don't think you should feel bad about being tired from just being at home for a computer. Yeah.
Thank you.
No, I remember this one time. There was someone at work. So it was quite a few years ago now. Someone at work. I remember during the weekend, we went on this really, really long hike. And I was so achy. And I think the same weekend, he had injured himself. He tore his ACL.
Ouch.
They were hiking. He went up a mountain. They went rock climbing. And on the way back down, I think he just lost his balance, or he stepped on a rock. And he literally just landed the wrong way. Got injured. And then he had surgery, all of that. But anyway, later on, I saw him and I sort of said to him, you know, that weekend you got injured, I went up on this hike and I was thinking how exhausted I was, how painful my legs were, all of that. I said that, and then I heard that you had injured yourself, and that sounds horrible and it's so painful, that I was just, okay, the pain that I had felt from just, you know, my hike and general achiness and, you know, your legs just hurting, I was like, oh, that's nothing. And he literally just said to me, he goes, yeah, but it doesn't matter. Pain is pain. Pain is painful. It literally doesn't matter where your pain comes from. It hurts. And I was like, oh yeah, thank you for validating my pain.
That actually made me feel better. Thank you.
I was like, yeah, you're right. It is painful. It doesn't matter. Like, if you think it's painful. You know, if you're tired, you're tired. It's like a competition.
The thing is, it's just weird for me because I don't know where it comes from. And I'm sure you read of that article where our emotional spark plugs are overloaded or something like that because of the pandemic.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, oh gosh, if this is the new normal, I don't know if there's anything for me to come back to in terms of having more vitality. But I have a new idea, and I don't know if you want to include this in the podcast. And what I want to do now, just to get out more, plan on live streaming my neighborhood walks.
Ooh, nice.
And that's something people do. I didn't realize that there are a lot of videos on YouTube like that, so I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, there's this YouTube channel. They don't live stream. They definitely edit their videos, but it's literally just someone walking around Manchester. And I'll send it to you because it's really quite weird, because sometimes I think, why would someone feel the need to watch these videos? But obviously people do, because I did. I watched one of his videos.
You watched the whole thing?
No, I watched one of his videos where it was like the Christmas markets last year, mainly because I was doing a video for the university on the Christmas markets, and I was going on Google and looking at all the different videos of the markets, and his came up, so I just watched it.
I actually like that idea because I super love the grocery stores here, the Japanese grocery stores. It's so nice just to browse.
Yeah.
And I would love to tour that. I feel like it's the next best thing to living in Japan. So I'm really happy about how there's such a thriving Japanese community here, which has led to all of the fun grocery stores.
Oh, it's awesome. That sounds really good. I'd watch it.
Yay. Like, I'm planning to live stream going to the zoo on a weekday. Just force myself to get out and...
Yes. It's like mukbangs where people watch people...
Eat.
Except yes. It's like living vicariously through your walks. Especially now people can't go anywhere.
That's true.
They'll be like, I'm going to go for a walk. And then watch you go on a walk. I sent it to you on Facebook. But yeah, he just like walks around the city, different parts.
I love the idea of a mukbang. But I feel like that's bad for me because that would be feeding an addiction. Oh, interesting. Yeah. And I wish I did that while I was in Hong Kong because I took walks.
Hong Kong
a lot.
Would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've planned to not go back to Manchester for a while.
No, I have to go back. So our contract ends the end of September.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to move out. We decided to end.
Oh, you mean your home, your lease?
Yeah. Well, the contract was for a year, and then our contract ends the end of September. And they had asked us if we wanted to renew, but if you renew, it has to be for an entire year. And we weren't willing to commit to an entire year, obviously. It makes sense, right? Especially right now where we don't necessarily want to be in Manchester if there's another proper full-on lockdown. It was pretty horrible being stuck in a flat.
Mm.
Yeah, so we're doing that. And then so we have to move out all of our stuff. So I'd say there's about a car full of stuff, at least, still there. There's a couple of pieces of furniture, which if we didn't bring, everything else will fit. So we're trying to figure out whether we still want that or should we sell it or just give it away or give it to a friend to keep for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We have to figure that out. Or do we want to keep it and make two trips? But it's a 4-hour drive each way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an 8-hour return drive. It's a long drive, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's without traffic. I do still have to go up because I have lab work that I'm still doing, and that's every other week. Well, at the moment I'm only allowed every other week, Monday to Wednesday, to go in.
Mm-hmm.
But they're hoping to relax it a little bit so that I can start coming in Monday to Friday, but there's no news on that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, so I don't know whether we're going to go up and then, you know, just pay for a room at a friend's, do it that way, or go up, stay in a hotel or something. Like, I don't know. Or is there going to be a lockdown and we won't be able to go up anyway? Like, I don't know. So yeah. We shall see.
Yeah, well, that reminds me actually of the time when I had to pack up in Des Moines. And when we were living there, we actually didn't know if we would be staying for more than a year because we were there on my husband's student visa. And then he works for a year and then the company would sponsor him for a H-1B visa, which allows him to work in the U.S. for longer. But we didn't get the visa. And so when we were living in our apartment, we didn't actually furnish it all that much. The major pieces of furniture that we bought were a bed and a desk. Oh, and a kitchen counter / island.
Mm.
And sometimes I get jealous of seeing people our age all settled down and nesting in their forever homes. And we're making do with the rental. And as millennials, you know, that's really not in our habit. The studies show that we're really not the type to own a house, but it feels like I'm unmoored somehow. I don't know how to feel about that.
But do you think it has something to do, well, it will, but do you think that it is necessarily that you don't feel at home, or is it more like physically having a place, if that makes sense? Does that make sense?
I think it's more of physically having a place to call your own. It's not really a feeling that I'm not at home. I mean, I'm happy to be here. But I think I just like the idea of picking out the furniture or designing something. I mean, you said that you like watching house tours, right?
Yes.
It's more of like, oh, I'd love to have something like that as a project, or, you know, just being able to be in complete control of your living surroundings. I think it's more of that. And then being able to stay in a place long enough to have something like that.
Mm-hmm. What are the rules like for renters over there in Singapore or in Hong Kong when you were there? Is it quite strict? Is it like, you can do whatever you want, just don't, you know, ruin things too much? Or is it quite strict that, no, you can't hang things on the wall?
In Hong Kong, because we were staying in a serviced apartment, because the minimum lease term in Hong Kong is 2 years, no exceptions. And we didn't expect to stay 2 years there, so we just stayed in a serviced apartment. We treated it like a hotel. We really couldn't do anything. And I think given that short amount of time, we wanted to keep things light. We didn't want to burden ourselves with more things that we'd have to transport from one place to the other. And here, the apartment that we're in is basically furnished already. I believe, though, based on the experiences that I hear from friends, they're quite strict. If you happen to leave a coffee stain on one of the countertops, and because of the quality of the countertops, it's porous for some of them, they were charged for a coffee stain or stuff like that. So definitely don't want to do anything like that. And I think every time you have to do something, you have to ask permission from the landlord, like to repair something, or they have to know.
What's the setup over there? For example, when you rent a place and you have your contract, do you put down like a deposit as well? And do they just take charges out of your deposit? Is that how it works?
I think so, yes. And it's also 2 years. Landlords generally encourage 2 years. But for foreigners, there's a clause where, if you have to go home, if you have to leave Singapore for whatever reason and you need to shorten your lease to 1 year, that's fine. But they do the 2 years also as a form of protection for the tenant. So they basically lock down the lease price for 2 years and it doesn't go up. So they're also incentivized to take a 2 year lease.
That was one of the things actually with our apartment as well in Manchester. Not only did they want us to renew for an entire year, but they were also increasing the rent. And the problem is that the main reason I had really wanted to live there or chose to live there was because we were in the middle of the city, everything's nearby, you know, it was more, the location was great. And then the flat was pretty good, but it's small. It's really quite small. And with everything going on right now, everything that was a positive about the place is lost. You can't take advantage of any of that anymore because I'm not going out. Apart from supermarket trips, I don't go anywhere except to the lab to work. So it kind of lost its appeal because even...
It's just nice that you have somewhere else to go there.
Like yeah, have a place yeah, to definitely to. Feel really, really fortunate that there is an option, you know, rather than feeling trapped in the flat and there's some place that we can go. So I'm just trying to manage the traveling up and down, but that's a short-term thing. Eventually in the coming months we'll find a place.
It's so nice that you get to bike around a lot. I should pick that up,
learning how to bike.
Yes, because I mean I can technically bike here
do it. I think especially the way Singapore is, it seems like a very bike-friendly place.
I think so. Mm. It looks like it.
Who's going to teach your kids?
My husband. But he hasn't taught me yet, so.
He can try his teaching skills on you first. Although maybe that's harder to teach a grown-up, you know, because you have that fear of falling. I feel like you're more aware of your own mortality.
And I think that's why, you know, I wasn't really allowed to ride a bike as a child. Yeah. Maybe your parents were afraid too.
Is it because, how long have you, without telling people where you live in Cebu, but how long have you lived in the house in Cebu?
I think I was there since third or second grade.
Where did you live before that?
I lived in Guadalupe, which was like a small compound.
Oh, I was just wondering why they'd be worried about you on a bicycle. Because where your house now, where you moved when you were third grade, like it's on a hill. So it's not very, you know.
Wouldn't it be more challenging to bike?
Because that's what I'm saying. Like it's not very bike friendly for learning. Definitely not. But was the other place flat or was it sort of not, or were there lots of cars or something?
It was flat. I think it's because the chances that I have had to ride a bike were really when I was spending time with my grandparents in the summer and they were based in Manila. And I think because they were grandparents, they weren't really in a position to teach me how to ride a bike. And so I think, looking back, I thought, oh, my parents didn't allow me to ride a bike. I think it's because also it would be difficult for my grandparents to teach me. So maybe just out of consideration for them, it wasn't an activity that I could do. That makes sense. Never thought of it that way before.
Cool. How's everything going though? Like in general, life stuff? How's lockdown in Singapore at the moment? I know you mentioned when we were messaging that the cases are pretty low over there.
Yeah, so we went out for lunch today and the mall that we went to, super full. Oh, wow. It's like an SM. So I feel like, except for the part where we have to check in to enter any establishment, or except for the fact that we all still have to wear masks, it feels like an ordinary day now. And I do see people, even though my husband has been working from home, and I think that'll be the case for a few more months, people have been going back to the office. So it feels pretty normal, except we can't really have tourists. And I don't know if Singapore has been open again for tourists. I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that.
But it sounds like things are normalish.
Normalizing, yeah, for the most part.
That's good to hear. Hopefully that continues and cases don't go back up again, which is what's happening over here. It's worrying.
Yeah, that's quite unfortunate. I do recognize that a lot of countries are vulnerable, especially in the Philippines. But I'm also fortunate that it's pretty okay here, fingers crossed. And I think they're gonna keep things strict because they're saying, oh, it's precisely what's working. It's the fact that we're strict.
Yeah. I remember earlier on, months ago, at the beginning of lockdown, or maybe it was before locking down, but basically just people saying, and the senior scientists in the country saying, that it's going to be a matter of if we put in tighter measures and things work and we don't see really, really high cases, people will say, oh, all these officials were overreacting. There was nothing to worry about. And then if you didn't put in all the restrictions and the cases go up, then people are going to be saying, oh, they weren't strict enough. And it's like a balancing act of being putting the measures in to prevent cases from going up, but also making people feel
they're not too restricted.
Yeah. But I think the problem at the moment is cases are going up. I think in the last 24 hours, it was like over 4,400 or about 4,400 cases in the last 24 hours. So that's a lot. But the people dying is still pretty low. Hospitalizations apparently are very slowly but steadily rising, which is worrying, I think. I think one of the things that I'm worried about is that it's still only September. It's still quite warm. People are still outdoors a lot. And not all the like university students are back at university yet. And I was listening to the radio a couple weeks ago and they were basically saying it's like a couple million students or something will be traveling over the course of 3 weeks across the country to university. And it's a lot of people moving from one part of the country to another, coming from abroad back into the UK to go to university. And it's like, it's inevitable, right? It's inevitable at this point. So we shall see what happens in October, because I think October might be, I don't know. We shall see. I'm not in charge. There are far more knowledgeable experts out there who know what they're talking about more. And we shall see what they say. I think at this point, I'm kind of just like, hey, we've done this once before. I can do it again. I feel like now I have a better grasp of what it'll look like and how I can work, you know, all of those things. How I can stay, how you can still stay feeling okay.
I feel like, yeah, that's a big lesson. You really have to learn to take care of yourself and really just learn to block out, for your own sake, all the news that's going on, because you can get burnt out just by exposing yourself to all that news.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, I don't know, it can get overwhelming.
Speaking of school, I have a list of the things that we were taught that turned out not to be true. And I'm curious to know what your list is.
Yeah, so these are things that we were taught in school or we learned in school that are, especially, I think a lot of these things will be like things we learned in elementary school, right? That sort of level where our teachers taught this to us, whether it's in history class or science class. And then you later realize, hey, that wasn't actually right.
And especially now, like, I'm curious to know, because you're a physicist, and for sure you would have a better grasp of the science classes that we had.
Wait, can I tell you, just because you said physicist, can I tell you a very short story?
Go.
In high school, I was basically studying to take the entrance exam for Ateneo. And then there's this like reviewer place in Cebu, and I went there because they had like books, you know what I mean? Like reviewer books and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I went there, I like bought some reviewer books so I could review because I didn't know what would be in an entrance exam like that. Anyway, the person there who was like a teacher, I think her expertise was like English.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Oh, what course are you applying to?" And I said, "Physics." She was asking what course I was going to apply to at Ateneo, and I said, "Yeah, I'm going to apply to physics." Actually, you know, my first and my second choice in Ateneo was both physics.
Oh, how would you do that? There's two kinds of physics in Ateneo?
Yeah, there's two kinds. There's a BA physics and then like a BSc physics. Oh, so my first choice was BSc physics, and then my second choice was BA physics.
That would have been fun to go to the
Can you
college?
Imagine? It would just be like...
Yeah.
But I would have been... Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we would be there together. But yeah. Anyway, yeah. So she asked, what are you applying to? I said physics. And then she said, oh, so when you finish, what are you going to be called? And she said, a physician? I'm like, no. I'm like, aren't you an English teacher? I don't understand why you were asking me this question. I was like, physicist?
Do you think she was joking?
No, she was serious. I said, no, physicist. She's like, oh, yeah, physician's a doctor. I'm like, yeah. Like,
I mean, let's give her some credit. Maybe it's not her first language.
No, maybe she was just sort of, I don't think she was dumb at all, obviously, but I think she is. It's just one of those things where she's like, oh, so physics, physician, and then was like, oh yeah, that's not right.
Kind of. Oh, I have another story that's related to that.
Yeah,
so I had a high school English teacher, and he said, when you write a sentence and you have to put a phrase in quotation marks, for example, your sentence is trying to communicate that somebody's saying something.
Yeah.
The period has to come after the end quote. So I was like, that's not right. For example, Kirsty said, let's go eat outside.
Yeah.
The period has to be outside of the quotation mark or the end quote.
Yeah.
And I kept insisting, no, that's not right. And my teacher would insist, yes, yes, it's right. And then only for me to find out later that in the next class, he admitted that I was right. And I feel like that's just one example. I feel like he's done this before.
Yeah.
And that it's been a pattern that he doesn't ever admit that he's wrong. And that just annoyed me.
Yeah. I just feel like, and this, again, doesn't need to go in the... in the podcast, but I was just gonna say that I just thinking about how everything's going on, and I really believe, and this is why I think you should definitely do your live streams, I really believe that with everything going on, things like YouTube and general entertainment, Facebook, things like that are things that will do really well, because at the end of the day, people will need, at the very least, entertainment. Yeah. So even things like Netflix or Disney Plus or Amazon Prime or Prime Video or whatever, all of these, or like cable TV, those are the first things, if people were struggling for money, those are the first things people are going to get rid of. They're not going to get rid of their internet, one. True. And then YouTube is free.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to watch stuff on there rather than anywhere else.
That makes sense. And I feel that especially now, I mean, Hollywood has been affected by the lockdown.
Yeah.
They've been having a hard time rounding people up to be able to film again. And I don't know that there's going to be any new TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Exactly. And actually, you know, in lockdown, I think a lot of people have gotten sick of all these stars. Like, some people have been, like, complaining. You know, like, early on, where, like, there's some celebrities or whatever, like, really well-off people, obviously, like, just complaining about, oh, I'm stuck in my house, and which is a valid point. But then loads of people are also like, you're literally sat in your mansion complaining to the rest of us.
I know. Like, I would love to be stuck in a mansion. And I'm already a homebody as it is.
Yeah. So,
I have friends who've been complaining in the Philippines. Oh, like another 6 months of being trapped at home. I'm like,
dude, your house is fake.
No. I mean, it's like, oh, stuck at home again. I'm like, oh, but this isn't so bad.
Yeah.
This was my whole life after getting married.
I don't mind it. Like, personally, I don't mind the being stuck at home bit. I think when we were in the flat and it was like a one-bed flat and it was just claustrophobic, the issue was that it was literally 24/7 in the flat and there was no outdoor space at all. And there's no balcony, you know, there's no garden, there's no park, nothing like that at all. So it was a little like, oh, I'm going crazy, like cabin fever type of thing. But the fact that we have the chance to be where we are now, where, you know, it's a little out of town, there's just outdoor space. Like, literally, I can open the back door and there's a little porch. And I have spent many days just working from the porch on my laptop, which on a warmer day, which is nice because it's not something I had the chance to do before. So that's really, really good. But yeah. Anyway, we've gone around in a circle. Sorry about that. I was telling you a little story. We went off on a tangent.
I want to say, if I could just stay at home 24/7, I probably would. I have to force myself to get out of the apartment. It's just that I can feel my vitality draining away if I just stay in the apartment. So, and my eyes, I feel like my eyes are already burning from, even though I'm wearing blue light glasses. I can feel it taking a toll. So what I've started doing is that I would go around, I would take a walk while listening to a podcast. So I feel like I'm getting productive because I'm taking care of my health, but at the same time, I'm getting entertained.
Yes.
Anyway.
Oh, perfect. So we look forward to your live streams, or I look forward to it, definitely.
Thank you. It's another one of the things that I can add to, okay, I'm bored with that. Let me try something else.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're like that.
Yes.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't feel so alone hearing that.
I call myself it's something I wrote down, and
what?
I wrote down that I'm a serial hobbyist.
Oh. How far do you get into a hobby before saying, okay, I'm bored? Or, okay, this is too difficult, I need to take a break?
I don't know. There was once I thought that knitting would be a good idea.
Oh.
So I do have a box of, well, I don't anymore. I got rid of it. I had a box of yarn and stuff and knitting. What is it called? Those stick things. What are
needles?
They called? Needles? Is that what they called?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had a book, knitting and all that. But I had an issue in that I couldn't get past like the second stitch. And then it would just all unravel. And then I watched YouTube videos and all this on how to do it. And every time I would try, it just wouldn't work. And it got to a point where I was like, well, I don't care that much. I don't care. And this isn't particularly relaxing or
being stressed, right?
Yeah. So I thought, I just can't be bothered. It's not, I don't care. So I just stopped, and then I had it, and a little box for a while, I think, thinking that I would come back to it. And then eventually after 2 years that I never opened the box again, I just sold all my stuff like for cheap, you know, and I don't really think about it. So I clearly didn't care that much to it's not something that I think about that, oh, I wish I'd learned. Yeah, I don't really care. So there was that. There was things like calligraphy, which is something that I really enjoyed.
I feel the same way about calligraphy. I couldn't get it right. So oh. I gave up.
Ah, right. Okay. So calligraphy, I actually really enjoyed. I went on a little course for the day back in Cebu. It was really fun. And then because I think the reason that I enjoyed it was because I've always been like the doodler, someone who writes on my notebook in different fonts. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it was something that felt more natural. The dots connected as far as, oh, this is a nice thing to try. So I did that. And then I still do it on my iPad. I do a lot of doodling on Procreate.
Uh-huh.
That's fun.
What made you let go of that activity? Like, why didn't you pursue it any further?
Oh, I still kind of play around with it. I don't do like proper exercises, I guess, where you have the lines and you're doing it really like strictly. And I think the reason that I don't do that anymore is, I don't know, I think I got a little bored with all the lines. So I basically will try. Well, here's the thing. I feel like I'm the kind of person who's like jack of all trades, master of none. Because I'll try things up to a certain point and then I'll get bored and I don't really care to be like a proper expert in it. But I like learn the basics and I'm like, okay, I know the basics. Then I'm kind of happy with that.
Is there anything that you do which is something that you can get lost in for hours? That's kind of like a meditative experience for you. Or is that the kind of thing that you get bored of quickly?
Journaling? Oh. I think that's a thing I can think of where I'm just like, I write a lot. The reason, usually when I'm journaling, the reason, if I'm, you know, like I'm not strapped for time and I'm just journaling, the reason I stop is usually because my hand hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than I want to stop, it's usually like my hand gets tired and then I stop. Mainly because my right hand seems to always be hurting lately. And I think it might be my phone, you know, like your thumb. My phone's bigger now than before. And yeah, I think it's a whole thing. I think journaling, things like that. Or
like you can spend hours in a day journaling?
Not every day. Definitely not every day. But for instance, the other day, I was journaling for maybe 2 hours. Like I said previously, like when I journal, I'm not writing my deepest, darkest secrets all the time or like really heavy feelings or things like that. A lot of it is like brainstorming or forward planning type things. Because, and this is something we can come back to, I think in another episode would be good, but I realized I'm a very future-oriented person, which may be an issue because sometimes I'm not present in the present and I'm looking forward a lot, which I think is a whole nother thing. But yes, so a lot of it is like planning and brainstorming and strategizing or whatever, scheming.
I think for me, that manifests in I'm always interested in the potential of something, but then I really lack follow-through skills. Or I really lack the focus to follow through.
But do you think that's necessarily a bad thing, or is it just you weaning out the things that you care about?
Maybe it's the latter in terms of, well, maybe I just haven't found something that I can really buckle down and work on for hours at a time.
Have you read Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert?
No, I should.
I know. I always... Have I mentioned it to you before? I must have, right?
I'm sure you have, yeah. And I think that's the book that you were talking about, The Creative...
Yes. I thought it was really, really good. I'm going to reread it because I think it's worth another read. Because I don't know, you know, like sometimes you have to be in a certain place mentally to be able to really internalize something that someone says. If you're not in that place, then it just goes over your head sometimes, or it doesn't hit the same way.
I completely agree. I feel like a lot of the life lessons that I'm coming to terms with right now, I'm sure I've heard this before, but it's the first time it's clicked in a particular way, or maybe there's some advice that you know at some surface level, but now that you've had to really live it and apply it, there's another aspect to it that you haven't really realized before.
Mm. I definitely recommend reading it. I think it might be good now where you are. There's one part of the book where she talks about like when you have ideas and how ideas have a life of their own, which is a little like fantasy based, because I don't think that's necessarily true. But I think what the point she was making, well, the way that I processed what she was saying was to think of it like there's a bunch of all these ideas out there, right? Or in your mind, whatever. There's all these ideas. And the idea that you come up with isn't necessarily unique, because there's always other people who will come up with like the same idea you have.
Mm-hmm.
But ideas aren't worth all that much unless you act mm-hmm. on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone else comes up with an idea and does something, and she was talking about a book where someone had this idea of a book, and then someone else wrote the book, which was pretty much the same story almost. And they were like, oh, that was my idea. But it's like, well, you didn't write it. So it's, you don't own the idea. You haven't,
yeah.
you didn't make it. You didn't produce anything out of that idea. How I kind of internalized what she was saying was that, well, when you have all these ideas, it's up to you to decide whether you act on it or not. And
mm-hmm.
you shouldn't be upset if someone else comes up with the same idea and acts on it. You didn't lose anything per se, because you didn't act on anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't own an idea, really.
That's true. And I think it's like that as well in when it comes to creating startups, because two people can have the exact same idea, but when they start to act on it, the execution can be completely different. So execution is key, basically. And it's also a way of saying, oh, if you had the same idea and somebody else executed it right away and it's what you thought, it probably wasn't that great of an idea if it was that easy to copy.
Mm.
So the barrier to entry, it has to be high, because that also determines the quality of the idea. It's also in the trying process or in the proving to make sure that it's really something that people would appreciate.
Mm.
Okay, so we veered a lot, but actually I am curious to know what other hobbies you've tried.
Let me think. Oh, heat embossing. So that was just a thing that shot off from the calligraphy, which I still have, and I've kind of done a little bit of it on and off. Do you know what heat embossing is?
Yes, that sounds cool. And it reminds me of the cry cut machine, because I feel like so many crafty moms are super into that.
Yeah. So my plan for Christmas is I'm going to make my own Christmas cards.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll use my calligraphy and my heat embosser. So I think that's one of the things that I do with my calligraphy skills is when I make a card or mm-hmm. you know, things like that, I do it. Or my nephew's baptism, they had little mm-hmm. giveaways, and then they put little like, a string with a little card, and I made the little labels on it with calligraphy. So little things like that. It's definitely more of a hobby. It isn't something that I thought, oh, I'll turn it into a business or whatever, because I genuinely don't think I'm that good at it at all. So mm-hmm. I don't think that going up to that level is necessarily for me, but I enjoy it. I think it's relaxing when I play around. Mm-hmm. When I do sometimes my Instagram photos, I'll put a little bit of drawings on there. So what else? Let me think. I don't know. I can't think of any right now.
But it's nice that you can do something just for fun or just to relax you. I feel like I've held on to the belief for the longest time that whatever hobby you take up, it must be something that you can eventually profit from. And I feel like that's placed such a burden on me in terms of stealing my enjoyment from something, because I'm pressured to think about, oh, how do I recoup the costs from this?
Mm.
And it's nice that you have something that's completely yours, where there's no pressure. It's just for the sake of pure enjoyment. And maybe that's something I also have to figure out. What do I enjoy? Just for the sake of enjoying something, I don't have to expect anything out of it except that I enjoy doing it. And I think I have to legitimize that with myself.
I don't know if I've always felt that way. I think that there was definitely that period quite a few years ago now where I was really burnt out and I did look at hobbies to help me feel better. That's why I thought knitting was a good idea, because I thought that was something that would be relaxing in the evenings, you know, after work. But it was too much. It was too hard. It was too hard. I think knitting might be something that you need someone next to you to teach you. And I didn't have anyone at that time. And then basically I just lost interest. But I think that, like you said, definitely doing something just for the fun of it is very, very valuable as far as feeling better, feeling relaxed, you know. Again, in that book, in Big Magic, the Elizabeth Gilbert book, there's a chapter where she talks about putting pressure on your creativity. So if you're someone who in your mind you're like, hey, I really want to make a living out of this, one of the worst things you can do is to immediately put pressure on your creativity to earn you money, because then you sort of take the creativity out of it. There's no room for you to explore. There's no room for you to kind of experiment with your creativity. There's no room for you to grow creatively as much, because you're relying on it to provide you a living. Whereas basically what she's saying is the best thing you can do is to have that thing that is providing you a living and that may be separate from your creative pursuits. Keep that for now, at least, and then explore the creative space in your life and just have fun for a bit. And then once that makes more sense in your mind, or once that turns into something that's clearer to you what that is, and that obviously changes for different people, then it's easier to then make a living out of it, because you already know what it is for yourself, and you're not like pressuring yourself to try and make money when you yourself don't really know what the creative side really looks like or how that feels to you. I guess, because I think you get confused, or you can't kind of distinguish what exactly it is you want out of your creative side when you're also trying to make money, because it's like trying to fit a round thing into a square hole kind of thing sometimes, because you're just trying to make money, like, I need to make money, and then you're just forcing it to happen rather than actually seeing that it's not working.
I think I get what you mean in terms of, well, let me know if this is what you're thinking as well. You want to be creative for the sake of being creative, for purposes of personal exploration, as compared to wanting to be creative and you're not anymore catering to yourself. You're catering to the person that you're trying to sell to, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it doesn't become an outlet for you. It becomes something where you have an obligation, not to yourself, but to the person you're trying to sell to.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's definitely a huge part of it. And I think that that's detrimental to your creativity, especially if it's not actually something that you're all that interested in. But I will say that it depends how you kind of feel about it, or how you approach it, right? Because if you approach it and you're like, this is a business, and you're very like business minded about it, and it's very much like, what can I create that is in the creative space but that will make me money, and then you're very business minded, and then that might work. But I think in this book it's really talking about creatives and creative people and creative personalities and creative pursuits and hobbies rather than business in the creative space.
I think that makes sense because I feel like there is some form of satisfaction in terms of the field of advertising. Even though a lot of people joke, oh, it's like selling your soul to come up with a creative idea. The pursuit in itself and perhaps the framework through which you find a big idea, I think even though it is creative work, even though it's in the service of something else, I think there is still some creative satisfaction to be had there. Of course, it depends, right? Like, it depends on the right kind of client. It depends on how collaborative they are with you. I think, as you mentioned, it doesn't always apply in a business sense because it's still an opportunity to be creative, even though the stakes might be different.
Yeah. How do you feel about, for you personally, about all of this and creativity and putting pressure on yourself and your creativity to earn you an income? Do you feel that that's something that you've experienced or something that you struggle with, or does it make more sense to you now?
I definitely struggled with that in the first year that I wasn't working and I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to find something to do, and none of that panned out. And I feel like when I put that kind of pressure on myself, that pressure doesn't really amount into anything meaningful or productive. And I end up spending a lot of time in my head and wasting energy thinking about things that I could be doing instead of actually doing them. So I feel like now, especially since we started doing this podcast and I started accepting that, okay, it's not likely that you're going to find a job soon. And I'm being unkind to myself by putting all that pressure on myself to come up with something that makes money. And I think that's also a self-worth issue, right? It's like you're not worth anything unless you're producing. Right. So I've had to dismantle that and really look for projects just for the sake of doing. And then I know you say you're a jack of all trades, master of none. And I say that as well. And that's also something I'm trying to come to terms with, that is it really a bad thing to be like that?
No.
And you said forcing a square peg into a round hole, right? It's like, why am I forcing myself to fit in this mold when it's a painful fit?
Yeah.
What am I benefiting myself by forcing myself to be this way? And I'm spending so much energy, you know, beating myself up, being unkind to myself by saying I should be like this, instead of just allowing myself to go with the flow. And I feel like that energy, and I have to think about how I spend my time, because am I spending too much energy thinking about why this wouldn't work or why I shouldn't be doing this instead of just actually doing it? I feel like I'm holding myself back in a lot of ways by focusing on the negatives of something.
Just on that, saying, is it bad to be a jack of all trades? And I think absolutely not. I think that a jack of all trades is even more valuable now than ever, because I think in the past people would specialize and be an expert in something. And I mean, I'm doing a PhD now, so that's literally what I'm doing, right? I'm specializing in one very small area of material science, one very small area of science. And that's completely fine. And I really, really enjoy it. But just as a wider view of life and skills and that in general, I think that nowadays, actually, we don't go around looking for the very, 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 very best person at anything. And that we actually do look for people who are good enough at what we want them to do, but can do a bunch of other things. So I think that it is, in most cases, more valuable to be someone who is good enough at 100 different things than someone who is the best at one thing. So, for example, in the creative space, I think that if you're someone who is good enough at writing, good enough at, like, I don't know, photography, good enough at graphic design, good enough at creating videos, good enough at editing, good enough in coming up with ideas, then you have so many options for things to be doing in the creative space or to create a business even. But then if you're someone who's just like, literally, I don't know how to do anything else, but I am the absolute expert at editing, then you're not like a one-stop shop for stuff. And then you would need actually to hire out and find a bunch of other people to help you, right?
Right. And I think being in that position of being an absolute specialist, it's like you need some form of flexibility to learn new things in different areas. And that can be a challenge if you've specialized in one thing this whole time.
Yeah. Agree. Agree completely. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to sit here and say that we don't need experts, because we do.
Yeah.
Obviously, we do. And we need specialists. But I think that when it comes to, I really think that in creativity, especially when it comes to creativity, you don't have to be the expert at anything. And then I even have the follow-up question of saying, who decides whether you're the best at something?
True.
It's so subjective. Whereas I think in other areas, like, for example, which may be like tangential from creative, and you mentioned advertising before, like, for example, you're an absolute expert at Facebook ads, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's valuable, obviously, and you potentially could be someone who's extremely sought after, or in the sciences, or in medicine, being the expert specialist in something, then that's obviously really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel like when it comes to art,
true,
what does being the best at something even mean? I'm not sure. It's so subjective. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of For a While. Catch you in the next one. Bye.